Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to our UBS Asset Management Monthly Macro Podcast. Each month, we hear from the top investment professionals from the UBS Asset Management Multi-Asset Team. Today, I'm pleased to introduce our speakers, Evan Brown, Portfolio Manager and Head of Multi-Asset Strategy, and Fatou Kanté, Multi-Asset Investment Specialist. Fatou, with that brief introduction, I'll pass it over to you to host today's session.
Thanks, Siobhan. Welcome back to all of our listeners. Today should be a really great discussion. So on the agenda, we have our latest macro views, our outlook for the remainder of the year going into next year, as well as how we're positioned in the MAPS portfolio. So Evan, as usual, what can you tell us about what's going on with the U.S. economy?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Fatou. So U.S. economy just continues to chug along quite nicely. So GDP growth for Q4, right now it's tracking at 3.1% after 2.8% last quarter. So a 3% real GDP economy, very, very good. So far this week, we've seen a bit better job openings data. We do have the employment report on Friday, which will be the main number. But, in some of the survey data, it's starting to pick up. In part, may reflect optimism on incoming President Trump's pro-growth agenda. So on the business side, we saw the ISM manufacturing improve this week. Consumer confidence has reached its highest level of the year. So overall growth looks just fine. And on the inflation front, disinflation trends has stalled a little bit over the last couple of months. But we've had these kind of bumps in the road before the continued disinflation trend reasserts itself, and that's kind of how we're thinking about it here.
So currently the market is pricing in about a 2/3 chance of a rate cut for the Fed for this December meeting. So in light of what you just said, what can we actually expect from the Fed, and how are they going to think about their next move?
So the Fed, they'll meet 2 weeks from today, highly likely to cut rates by 25 basis points in our view, just barring a massive employment number on Friday or a very big inflation surprise in the CPI when it comes out in several days, they're likely to cut rates, and that's what we're largely hearing from the key Fed speakers. We had Fed Governor Waller, who's a leader on the Open Market Committee, and he said essentially that the bar is high for them not to cut rates because he still very much sees rates at a restrictive level. He sees the pause in disinflation that I just mentioned as a bump in the road, and we're still on a broad path back to target. So they'll be cutting rates likely in December. The question is what happens from there, and there's just a lot of variability. It's a lot that we need to see from Trump's policies on tax cuts and stimulus and as well as tariffs and immigration. All of these things are going to have effects on growth and inflation. So, Fed is not going to preempt that. They'll give their overall forecast, which I think they'll probably forecast a couple more rate cuts next year, which is broadly in line with market pricing. But it'll be an interesting year on what we get policy wise, and that's going to drive a lot of what we see in terms of Fed policy as we go through 2025.
So the Fed isn't the only central bank right now that's at cutting rates. Outside of the U.S., there's also many of the major central banks cutting rates as well. We also have geopolitical tensions, as well as what the impact of a Trump win would be on the global economy. So given that a lot is happening globally, what are some of the key news or opportunities that your team is currently monitoring?
Yes, there is indeed plenty going on globally, and a lot of it is local politics. So, we're seeing French political drama. We saw the very short martial law imposed in South Korea yesterday. For us, the key is just to focus on, okay, what really matters for the economy, for the global economy, and what's happening in Europe, what's happening in China, and the major regions, and what does it mean for policy. And broadly, the data remains generally soft in Europe. China picked up a little bit lately on the recent stimulus measures, but still dealing with a lot of headwinds. And of course, we've got to look forward, and it's highly likely that we're going to see tariffs being raised on China once Trump once he is inaugurated, and potentially on Europe as well. And it's not clear how aggressive that Trump will be, how he'll end up. It's always this question of what's just negotiating tool and bargaining positions, and you know, tariffs are a form of leverage, absolutely, and we're already seeing him wield that with threats of 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico and China related to immigration and fentanyl. There's no one knows for sure what we're going to get on the trade front, but I think what's important to take away is that even just the threats, right, are a weight on sentiment and business confidence in these countries that are more trade dependent, right, than the U.S. Not to say it doesn't affect U.S. corporate confidence as well, but it, you know, we at least have some positive kind of animal spirits, deregulation, excitement about tax cuts to offset that. Elsewhere, it's really just facing these threats and uncertainty, and a lot of what the market is pricing in is more aggressive easing outside of the U.S. By central banks as a needed response to those headwinds.
Now, you recently wrote this December's Macro Monthly called "Can Anything Stop U.S. Exceptionalism?" And this actually just came out today, so I highly recommend our listeners check it out if you can. So in line with the theme of this article, what are the risks to our views of continued U.S. economic and market performance?
Yeah, and thanks, Fatu, for plugging the piece. And absolutely, we're still very much in the view of continued U.S. economic and market performance. But the piece is just acknowledging that we've had, you know, over a decade of U.S. dominance, and if anything, the case for U.S. economic and market outperformance versus the rest of the world is as strong as ever with the policies we're likely to get from the Trump administration, and AI as a big potential driver of productivity as well. But of course, valuations are higher too, right? And relative valuations of the U.S. versus the rest of the world are fairly stretched. So we want to always be thinking about what can change, right, relative to our base case, what can go wrong. And so this was an exploratory piece and largely how we're thinking about things going into the year, of what we're watching and in terms of what would get us to maybe change our minds. And, we pointed to three things. First would just be a narrowing of growth differentials between the U.S. and the rest of the world. We now have a higher bar. We've had repeated over the last 2 years, the U.S. economy has beaten economists' expectations, but those expectations have now risen for 2025, and there's a much lower bar outside the U.S. So, you know, could China fiscal stimulus surprise to the upside? Could we get a little bit more fiscal stimulus out of Germany? So these are the kind of things we're looking at. Relatedly, President Trump may not be nearly as aggressive on tariffs as people expect. You know, he as much as he has campaigned on trade, the average American doesn't really care that much about trade. What they care about is inflation, and people's unhappiness with inflation is the major reason why Trump was elected. And so he may be more hesitant because he doesn't really have a mandate to be launching tariffs to such an extent that it's driving up prices on consumers, or having tax cuts that are so stimulative that they drive yields higher and therefore mortgage rates higher, making housing even less affordable for Americans. So that's, this is not kind of a growth at all costs mandate that Trump had in back in 2016. And then the last one is just, you know, there's a lot of concentration in the U.S. indices, and we all know the Magnificent Seven, the AI trade, and so if there's some kind of hiccup there and concern about, you know, how we'll actually get monetization of all the CapEx that's been done in this space, then that's something we have an eye on as well. So again, not our base case, but things we're keeping an eye on in 2025, so we can be flexible if the facts change.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.